Welcome to The Clarifier, where we take a close look at our toughest problems at work.
Feeling of deep regret or remorse, like, oh man, we've got the wrong team, right? And a moment of feeling like, oh man, I have messed this up. Like, I've just hired people who are bad.
And turn that discomfort into advantage.
In so many situations, I've realized that you just have to get much more explicit about what you're looking for, right? So when I say, I need you to drive the agenda for this time together, what do I mean by that? How do I want you to use this time? What's effective and what's ineffective? And I just had never really laid that out.
Today, we're talking to Kibo School's founder and CEO, Ope Bukola. Kibo is an online university in Africa with the goal of increasing employability for young Africans. Like so many leaders, she experienced a gap between what she wanted and what she got from her team. But instead of stewing in her disappointment or blaming others for not getting it, she named her unspoken expectations. She acknowledged her own blind spots and took responsibility for communicating more clearly and helping her team deliver. Ope's story of frustration is so relatable. And the level of personal mastery she eventually reached is remarkable. I feel so lucky to have Ope share her story and let us learn from her sometimes uncomfortable journey. What will it look like when Kibo has achieved its fullest form?
The world will see Africa as a place to get global work, world-class talent. In a few decades, most young people will be African. So, you know, I'm Nigerian, so it's a very personal mission, but also it's an important mission for the world to ensure that the future people, literally, have the skills and have the knowledge to be really productive.
The framing that you just offered, most young people will be African, just illustrated scale in a way that was so effective for me.
What we do today is we offer an online bachelor's degree in computer science. We also offer a lot of short career-focused courses to help young people launch their careers.
Your work is both in education, but then you've got a metric around employability. Is that right?
That's right.
Are you focused on placement also, or it's primarily education for now?
It's both. And I don't actually like that people think about education and placement as two separate things. Because when you ask young people, why are you going to university? The number one answer is like, so that I can get a great job. You know, they also want to make friends and all these other important development things. So at Kibo, we think about them as one and the same, meaning one, we try to offer programs that are really linked to employer demand. And everything in how we teach is designed to get you ready for work.
Fueled by this intolerable opportunity, Ope joined forces with two co-founders. They started offering free one-month online courses called Try Kibo to see if their idea would actually work. It wasn't a guarantee. In a continent where electricity is an issue, data is expensive, and a lot of people don't have devices, they needed evidence that young Africans could and would study online. And they did. In 2022, they launched an online accredited degree program in Nigeria, Ghana, and Kenya. Since then, adapting to market demand, they've expanded their offering to include shorter certification programs. They've been creative and agile in attacking the question of how to make more young Africans employable. Now for something new. We often bring you conversations directly with founders, but today you get to hear from the founder and her coach. Ope's coach is going to shed light on Kibo's ups and downs and the inner workings of Ope's mind, the way only a coach could do. Meet Mandisa Khanna.
I'm Mandisa. I'm a coach with Talentism that works with founders and CEOs, and I started working with Ope in August of 2022. So it was right before they had kind of just really, they were really ramping up the degree program, and it was at a place where they had hired a number of people working on really just expanding the capacity of Kibo to deliver what they were about to do. They're about to bring on a bunch of students, and so they were in the midst of, how is that going to work? How are we going to fulfill these commitments, scale up, and those types of challenges?
So Ope starts working with Mandisa, and pretty quickly, she hits a wall with her growing team.
this moment happened in that phase where we had hired a lot of people as a team to deliver. I personally had a lot of direct reports. I think it was around October or last year. We're a distributed team, so I split my time between Nigeria and New York. And this happened to be a time when I was in New York. So I'm often up really early because time zone difference to have one-on-one meetings. So I remember one day, you know, I get up kind of 5:30. I think my first one-on-one is either at 7 or 7:30. I look through, I kind of just have the agendas linked in each calendar invite. I open each one and every single agenda is blank. And the idea of these one-on-ones, and I think I had 5 scheduled that day, is that it's really an opportunity for the team to ask for help, right? It's like, we don't have a lot of meetings. I'm going to give you this time and you're going to tell me how I can help. And so seeing that nobody had really done the work to prepare just like really, really annoyed me, because it's like, guys, it's 6 a.m. I'm getting up early to do this. WTF. And I remember closing all the documents, canceling all the meetings with the same sort of note, like, there are no agenda items, so I guess you don't need this time. And I think I immediately went for a walk around the neighborhood because that usually helps me calm down when I'm about to explode. And just really came back feeling like there's so many things going wrong. All these people have so much to work on. How can they be so unprepared, right? Like, how can they have nothing? And it was a really just, yeah, very frustrating morning.
Tell me a little bit about like what you thought and what you felt when you saw they were empty.
My initial reaction was just frustration / anger, maybe at the individuals. I think the other thing that I thought was, it was like maybe a feeling of deep regret or remorse, like, oh man, we've got the wrong team, right? And a moment of feeling like, oh man, I have messed this up. Like, I've just hired people who are bad, and just regretting who we've got on the team right now. So I think those are probably the feelings, like anger, frustration, a little bit of remorse.
What were you telling yourself about them? What story was going through your head about those people who couldn't be bothered to even come up with an agenda?
I think a few things. Probably one was just like, perhaps they're really oblivious, right? Like, they can't see the gaps in their own work and they don't know how to ask for help. So maybe it's like, are they just like oblivious or indifferent? Do they not care, or they don't, it's either they don't know or they don't care. And both of those are problematic.
One of our talentism terms around like the narratives we make up about people is like, they're either bad, stupid, or lazy, right? And it sounds like it's one of those, right? Yeah. Don't know and don't care. Is this something you brought up with Mandisa at the time?
Yeah, I think I probably wrote it in my confusion log at the time. And the idea of the confusion log is just sort of jotting down really quickly where you have these moments of, the way I use it at least, is moments of extreme emotion, good or bad, like things that just don't make sense. So I put it in the log, and I think we probably talked about it during our next call.
Yeah. Mandisa, what did you hear when Ope was bringing that up?
What was interesting for me is that one of the first things I learned in that conversation was, you know, yes, there was frustration there, but there was also something else that was kind of hanging over it that gave me an insight to what she cares about, which was, not only does Ope want to build this university for computer science students in Africa, she wanted Kibo to be a place where very talented young people on the continent could come and could flourish. And flourish inside the company, and maybe they didn't have very robust mental model around how business is done, about agendas and these different things like that, and where they could come and kind of get that and really thrive. And that was like really important to when she was able to sort of articulate that, because I was like, oh, okay, so this is another layer to what you care about with what you're trying to build.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point, because when you think about like, how do you become world-class, right? When you're an education institution, we're focusing on what happens at school, but so much of it is also, you have to work at phenomenal places, right? So I developed really because I got to work at these great organizations and just sort of saw how it's done. So I take it really seriously that Kibo as a company has a high excellence culture, so that people who work here really level up, right? The same way we want our students to.
What did the coaching conversation sound like?
It's funny because I feel as if coaching conversations often start out with just like, I'm really mad, I'm complaining about this. And then the thing that Mandisa and I are often trying to do, or the thing that I get the sense that she's trying to do, is to understand the deeper context and what was it exactly that I was expecting that didn't happen. So I think that's where the conversation went. And for me, it was about just starting to unpack my expectations for how people showed up at work. A lot of them informed by my own experiences at work and seeing how they weren't being met at Kibo and trying to understand why.
And what did you come upon when you started to ask that question, why? Why was there a difference between what sounds like were your implicit expectations and what people were actually delivering?
I think one of it is just what you've said, which is implicit expectations and my inability to make the implicit explicit. I think that in particular, there's a bit of, I really believe in people figuring things out. And for the most part, I want to give you a goal and then I want you to like take the initiative to ask the questions, to seek resources. I don't want to lay it out exactly like this is how it should be done. And in so many situations, I've realized that you just have to get much more explicit about what you're looking for, right? So when I say, I need you to drive the agenda for this time together, what do I mean by that? How do I want you to use this time? What's effective and what's ineffective? And I just had never really laid that out.
I'm curious, Mandisa, for what it was like for you sitting in that coaching seat as you were unpacking this.
Yeah, there was a lot of richness around this notion of expectations and how are they set and what are people receiving and things like that. And that then led a little bit, as Obey's kind of saying, is like, we started unpacking sort of what does management mean? Like, what does it mean to you? What do you want it to be? What are you actually doing? Okay, well, what you want people to figure it out, great. But here's the context that everybody's in, and here's what you've provided them, and how is this going to work? And how can we close some of the gaps that might exist? That was really important, sort of next step to talk about what is management even? What does it mean?
Yeah.
I'm hearing you describe something that at Talentism we often call a blind spot. Oh, I didn't even know they needed that. Or I didn't know that was a thing. and a blind spot can sometimes come because it's something you do so naturally, you're not even aware of it, like breathing. And sometimes it can come because it's something you don't really value and you're not that practiced at. And I'm hearing that this one, it sounds like the latter. I don't really value being explicit about my expectations and managing people closely. And so if that makes sense, if that term blind spot resonates, can you tell me a little bit about what it was like, Ope, to see that blind spot and grapple with it?
Yeah, I think the interesting thing about the management blind spot is initially, I probably pushed back on the notion that I had a blind spot around management because I managed before and I was a good manager, darn it. But what I realized is like I managed in these environments often where it was like management super light, right? It's like you're going to come in, you're going to figure it out and your manager is going to be there to answer questions, but they're not really trying to hold your hand, right? And I liked that. I personally liked being in those places that were high autonomy, high independence. And so I sort of started Kibo expecting that we would manage in that manner, which is to say not manage that much. Like I don't know if I respect management as a thing still. I respect it more than I did 18 months ago, but I still inherently am like, people should just like figure out how to do the thing that they've been told to do. So I think initially I received it as like, no, I don't have a blind spot. You're wrong. But as I thought more about what I believed management to be, the blind spot became more apparent.
What is management?
That's a great question. Can I ask Mandisa? Yeah. Can I pass that? I'll pass is what I would say in class if you ask that question. I'll pass that one to Mandisa.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing, right? Like, who gets to decide what good management is, right? I think one really important thing is context, what is good management at Kibo versus what is good management at other places you've worked at. I think when it comes to the autonomy piece, I think that was really important for OPE to understand, well, these are the outcomes I want. There are a bunch of different ways to get it done that I can choose, but I do have to contend with the context that we're in.
Yeah, I think that's a big one, right? And for me, before Kibo, I worked at Google, and we just had a really different context of the people who came into the company and the experiences they'd had, right? Even if they hadn't built our particular product, they'd built other products before. The context was very different than bringing all of us together to try to do something that a lot of people don't do, period, right? Like launch new universities, and then bringing a lot of strong, high potential, committed to the mission, but like green people into it. I really had to think through how I needed to shift given that context.
I wonder if there was a moment where it felt different to maybe take responsibility for some of the outcomes that before were about other people being bad, stupid, or lazy. When you thought about those blank pages, did any of it connect back to, oh, this is in part because of the way I'm leading?
Yeah, and that was like a bit of an aha moment. And Mandisa and I talked about it a lot, to think about how do you balance wanting people to have autonomy and to figure things out with providing the right level of support, guidance, collaboration to actually make projects successful. And I just wasn't doing the latter enough. So one of the things that happened in my conversations with Mandisa is that she would push on, does this person know that you have this expectation? What is the expectation? How are you talking about how you work together? I think running some experiments around just like, what's the right way to try to understand someone's mental model around the work we're doing and to share mine. That was when I started getting feedback that was like, oh, right, actually, they're thinking about it this way, and I'm thinking about it in a very different way, and I need to share my thinking, or they're not even sure how to approach this thing. And it's like, I've given them this vague sentence of like, oh, why don't you build a product that enables deeper learning? But I haven't really said, here's how we might think about that process. Here's a process for how you get at what should be in an MVP education product. So I was in some ways, I don't want to use the word hazing because I wasn't doing it maliciously, but it was a little bit of like, okay, you can sink or swim, and I'm not going to give you the benefit of my experience or my perspective because I want you to come up with, really, it's because I wanted people to find their own style and I didn't want to impose my style, but it was actually quite harmful because it meant in many cases they were flailing and I wasn't helping.
You used a really interesting word, mental models. Like, did we share a mental model? Can you tell me what that means?
Sure. So when you are approaching your work or life, really, whether or not you make it explicit, there's a model that we're each creating about how the thing works. And we know that there are a lot of models that are well-tested. They can be really helpful in different situations. But what I wasn't necessarily doing was sharing those mental models with our team members. It's like, you go figure out how this works. But I can give you like a mental model or a framework. Like, here's a framework for thinking about what makes a successful product launch. Or here's a framework for thinking about what's a critical decision and a less critical decision. I'm learning that if you don't give people those models or those frameworks, they might just spend a lot of time feeling helpless. And it's not as if they're not capable of doing the thing. They just need a way to structure the process. And so being really explicit about, tell me how you're thinking about structuring this process, which is a way of me trying to understand their mental model, and then being like, okay, well, here's how I've done it in the past, or here's how I might encourage you to think about it. That can really give people a lift, and it's not doing the work for them, right? Like, they still have to do the thinking.
Yeah. I'm hearing that it's a way of unlocking the talent and potential you already have on your team.
Yeah.
Mandisa, can you tell us about what it was like to be in the coach seat?
This one was a little more complex because the way I saw it, there was a couple different things going on kind of all wrapped into one. So I think there was a different kind of blind spot at play here, which is a little bit more of a talent blind spot. Like, Opeh is a pretty structured thinker. She's pretty good at synthesizing and backing things out from a goal, and that just comes really naturally to her. And she may still not quite believe me that she has this, but we talked about that a lot. I'm like, oh, I think you're really good at this. You're better than other people. And she would say, like, well, isn't everybody this good? And I would be like, no, not at all. And I think that might be part of what's going on here, you know? And so just being able to try to offer that perspective. And then I think there is also a little bit of fear at play, too. Like the well-intentioned, you know, I don't want to step on people's toes. I don't want to micromanage. I want them to be able to feel free to do things how they want. That was true. But I also think there was a little bit of a like, well, if I give them this structure now, I'm going to have to do it forever, you know?
Say a little bit more about that, I'm going to have to do it forever.
Yeah, well, it would just come up, right? We talked a lot about like how she saw this unfolding, right? And I think that ended up being a shift, you know, the way we talk about it today of, okay, I'm enabling somebody to grow, right? That's the way I'm hearing it today. But like rewinding, I think that she was afraid she would stifle this individual. And we had to get past that to be able to sort of, you know, try a new way.
What did it take to get past that?
For me, it took a few experiments in being more explicit about expectations and also frameworks for doing the work. And so I remember in some cases, experiments would be like, I'm really going to evaluate this thing and record a loom that tries to just dump my thinking. Like, this is what's going on in my brain when I see this thing, and this is how I think about it. And it felt, I think in some cases, like, oh man, this is a lot of negative feedback or it's too much, but really helping be like, I want you to think like I think, and this is how I think about this. So that was one type of experiment. I think another type of experiment was more, you might describe it as like collaborative problem solving. Instead of being like, go figure this out and come back to me when you figured it out, it's like, let's just actually spend time together, right? Let's talk about what's the problem we're trying to solve. Let's try to write a problem statement together. I feel like I had so many instances of, oh my gosh, I spent 90 minutes writing a stupid problem statement. But that was a really helpful learning loop to go through together of, okay, are we aligned on what we're actually trying to do? And it took a lot of time. I think maybe it took more time than I wanted to devote to the art of management, if you will. But that's really what it felt like, was trying to show up differently as a manager and seeing what worked. And not everything stuck, but some things did work.
So you've used the term experiment a few times. Can you tell me what that means to you?
Yeah. So I think the experiment language is something that I've picked up from coaching, but also resonates with me very much as a product person and an entrepreneur, which is what we're really trying to do is not get it right, but to learn and move towards the right answer. And so the experiments would be in our coaching conversations after sort of exploring these confusions, just trying to come up with one or two things I might try differently, right? One or two ways of interacting differently with people at the company and see what the results are. So that's what I mean by the experimentation.
I also find it a nice approachable word, you know? It's just a way of framing it because I don't think that I have all the answers, right? So I'm here learning too. And so it's like, okay, so if we think this might be going on, what do we need to do to learn more, to dial in the picture a little bit? And I think it just feels really appropriate. Again, given the context, right? Because a lot of times we're working with startups, a lot of times there's a lot of unknown that we're dealing with.
Yeah, yeah. It feels less weighty than solution.
Yeah.
And it feels like there's an opportunity to take from it what works, but then to keep trying new things. So I'm curious, now that you have this new approach, how does it feel relative to some of the fears you were holding around, am I going to have to be involved forever? Am I going to have to hold everybody's hand through everything? How does it feel today compared to those fears?
I think that it feels as if people are actually more empowered and people feel a little bit more open to share and to try. So what it's actually done, which is positive, is I think it's reduced the pressure. And I didn't quite realize that some folks on the team felt a lot of pressure to go get it right. But I think it's changed the dynamics, and it's allowed our team members, some with me, but also some with each other, to be a bit more collaborative in how they work and to ask more questions and not to feel this urge to like, oh my gosh, I've been given a thing. I better go figure out how to do the thing or I'm going to look like an idiot. So I think it's changed just the tone and the nature of how people work together in a really positive way.
I'm curious, how has that impacted business results?
We're going faster, right? And to me, the main advantage that you have when you're at our size and stage is like your speed of learning and speed of change. And so I see us being able to be like, okay, we're going to try this partnerships thing with university. Let's go figure it out. All right, it's been a few weeks. This is what we learned. Maybe we should pivot it this way. So I think that it's just helping us move more quickly, which is a really key business result and something like, you know, we need to continue pushing on.
Mandisa, what have you seen as Ope ran these experiments? What were some of the results and how have you seen the way she's leading change and impact the organization?
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely echo the speed. I think that the amount the co-founders are delegating has gone up as well, which was really something that we identified as really important from the beginning to make sure that the folks at sort of the do level of the organization felt empowered and set up, and then that the co-founders could really think about the strategy. And then I love what Ope said about, because this is something I hadn't really thought as much about, of the potential culture shift within the org. Like the potential feeling of, you know, more safety, and people are maybe feeling a little bit more willing to experiment and try. Like I guess I hadn't really seen that myself. So I'm just really thrilled to hear that that is also a component.
I want to double click on a little bit of what we just talked about, because I think helping a listener to this podcast understand what's it actually like to run an experiment, especially when it's inside of your blind spot. Like, that's a beautiful thing that we can share with people who might be listening. And I want to hear it from both of you. And so maybe we start with Mandisa this time. Like, what was that like to sit across from someone and know, like, okay, the thing I'm about to suggest you do, you don't want to do. Like, tell me, like, bring me into some of those sessions and tell me what that was like.
It's funny because it's when we get to those moments that I know that we're on the right track. Right. And there, Ope as a leader, like, I think she's got a bunch of distinctions, right? But the way I experience her in coaching is somebody who is very curious, self-skeptical, and has a bunch of courage. So what I mean by that is we'll be exploring something and, you know, something will pop up and she'll be like, oh, I don't know if I agree with that, you know, or she'll say like, oh, that bothered me. Why does that bother me? And then because she's willing to do that and go there, that's when the richness comes out. And that's when we get underneath the thing and we're able to kind of take the next step. So that ability to not just take what I'm saying, right? Like, it's not like she's just accept, oh yeah, you're definitely right. Like, if this is definitely somebody who's going to question what she's being sort of told, but then also question the internal assumptions at the same time and kind of hold them both and be in tension with them for as long as it takes. So that's one. And then the second thing I was saying about courage is I have high confidence that she's going to do the experiment. Once she sets her mind and says, oh yeah, this is going to be terrible, but I'm going to do it. I know, I don't even worry. I know that the next session she's going to come back and then we'll talk about, okay, how did it go? What did we learn? But that willingness to say, yeah, I don't think I'm going to like this that much, but it feels important. I see the outcome that I want outside of it, so I'm going to try, is certainly a behavior that she displays.
Okay, what's that like for you?
I like the notion of let's just try to do it differently and see what happens. But then when you are actually the one that has to run the experiment, it just creates like a high degree of discomfort. So I almost have a routine where after our coaching calls within the next day or so, I'll go through and be like, what are the experiments I'm running? Okay, this is the list. When am I actually going to do this? I almost have to force myself to do it by making it a to-do item. Like during this one-on-one, you are going to try saying X, or you are going to use this specific language to see what that elicits. So doing it can be, depending on what it is, it can sometimes just be really uncomfortable because it's also not, it's often like things that don't feel like my natural style. So accomplishing it takes being quite methodical.
Does it get easier as you practice doing the thing that feels unnatural?
Yes. I think most of the experiments that work get easier, because if it doesn't get easier, it's just hard to keep it up, right? You might be able to force yourself to do something once or twice, but unless it starts to feel, if not natural, very useful, it's hard to maintain.
Do you think that seeing the impact in your organization helps you as a leader do a thing that maybe feels unnatural or uncomfortable?
For sure. I think it's helped me change my own behavior. It's also just made me more bullish on the value of thinking really deeply about how you show up and trying to show up in different ways. So that's been really positive. And then I also think that the language of experimentation, of like reflection, confusion, has sort of been trickling down through our organizations, even to people who haven't had any interaction with like coaching or talentism. And it's just like helping us shift the culture in a really nice way.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things that I've heard Talentism's founder say, and I've totally stolen it with my clients now, is if a client says to me, oh, I'm not good at that, I'll really dig and understand, are you not good at that? Or are you unpracticed at that? And I think what I'm hearing you say is there are some things that felt unnatural, but when you saw they were useful, it was worth practicing them.
I think that thinking, okay, we've got this experiment, it's working and it's going to work forever, is just foolhardy. And so they're just going to be things like your blind spots that you're going to need to come back to over and over again. So not getting frustrated to be like, oh, I thought I totally evolved and become a different manager. It's like, well, you are evolving, but the work doesn't really end. And so I feel as if we'll come up with there'll be new challenges or new confusion where the root still seems to be some of the same blind spots. And you're like, but we've been doing this for a year. Shouldn't that be totally obvious? So learning to just cut myself some slack on those things too.
Yeah. Mandisa, you recently wrote something that had such a beautiful line in it. I'm not going to be able to remember it exactly in the moment, but it was something like, just expecting everybody to be on their best behavior isn't right. A great strategy for a company.
Yeah.
And so design a system that works for what your people are actually like. Yeah. And I'm hearing Ope, you say like, look, even when I saw this blind spot, even when I ran experiments to help me with this management blind spot, there were still times when I fell back into my old habits and patterns. And so Mandisa, help us understand as Ope's coach, what's it like to help her design for herself, not her aspirational self, but her real self?
Well, I was sort of just thrilled when she said the term cut, I tried to just cut me some slack, because I actually think that that's really important, because I think that that we talk about self-acceptance a lot, and I think that's really hard for people to do. And so I was just thrilled that you kind of brought that up of like, that's part of the process, that's part of the evolution. I think one of the outcomes that I think we're observing is the very thing I think she was afraid of, which was sort of like she would kind of do this management stuff and then have like sort of more management responsibility. She'd be like deeper in. But what's actually happened is that she has been able to delegate and let go and have the team sort of owning goals at a different level, a higher level. And it's just funny now that I think about it, that is like what she was actually afraid of didn't come true. In fact, it was the opposite. Or so far, that's sort of, you know, some of the outcomes we're seeing right now.
Ope, tell me about that.
Yeah, I think that that is such an interesting way of putting it, and it's not a way I would have synthesized it until this conversation, but it makes sense, right? It makes sense because the coaching process and the experimentation process is about unearthing things about myself as a manager and the way I show up. But the more I understand that, the more I share it with my team, right? It's like, this is what I'm like. And then you both give people permission to think, okay, then what am I like, right? I think they're able to just do better work and work with more confidence and autonomy. So it makes sense that that's been what's happening. I wouldn't have called it when we started, but.
Me neither. We had to experiment to get there.
Yeah.
This is such an interesting outcome. And I think one of the things I've come to believe as a coach is an unnamed fear will almost always come true. Because the protective behavior that shows up to try and hide from that fear or keep that fear, at that bad thing at bay, almost always invites it. And so I think what I'm hearing you say is, in that moment, all those months ago, when you saw those blank sheets, right, the protective behavior was, oh, these guys are idiots, I've got to fire them all. And where would, maybe not idiots, but these people are not being entrepreneurial and figuring things out at the level I would expect. I probably need to replace my team. What would Kibo look like today? Do you think, I don't know, hypothesizing, kind of like playing out the alternate version or path in the multiverse that we never actually get to see, if you hadn't done this work and if you hadn't sort of worked your way through all this learning?
I think that we would have had even more turnover, which would have prevented us from having this expertise and also the commitment as a team to make some of the big shifts and changes we're making now, right? So there's this thing that can sometimes be in conflict, which is, okay, you hire someone for potential, how quickly must they deliver on that potential before it's like, all right, you're out, we got to get the next person in here. And I do think you have to hold people to high expectations, and obviously you don't get hiring 100% right, and there are going to be some people who are not a fit for the company. But I feel as if working more on myself as a manager has actually allowed me to help some people like turn their potential into reality versus be like, okay, well, it's just not working. Let's go look for the next person, right? And in an environment that we operate in where like strong talent is hard to come by, that's not sustainable. But also, if truly what we want Kibo to be is a place that's transformational, not just for our students and our employees, that's not the culture we want to build anyway. So I think if I hadn't done it, and if we as a management team weren't thinking really thoughtfully about it, we would just had more turnover and created a culture that's not a learning culture.
What really hit me about what you just said, Ope, is like it's this real unlock, which is, your orientation as a leader, as a CEO, can be, I need better people. But that's kind of hard to control, right? Like your talent flow, how they perform when they get here and that kind of thing. Or your orientation could be, if I'm a better manager, which is in my control, I can probably get a lot more out of the people I have. That switch in orientation, it's them, they're the problem, I need better people, to the opportunity sits with me, yeah, to manage in a way that unlocks their potential for my organization. That feels really powerful.
People also enjoy personal growth, right? So I think people on the team they can look back at 6 months ago or 12 months ago and see their own evolution. And that keeps them more committed to the vision and to what we're building.
Mandisa, do you have a take on that? What would Kibo look like today had Ope not experimented with a different approach to management?
I guess the way I would see it is like the challenges would have been stuck at my people are not filling in their agendas, right? now this has given us the opportunity to tackle much bigger challenges, right? I mean, there's still challenges, but to level up the confusions, I think that is that's sort of the power of the journey. It doesn't make it easy, but it makes it more impactful.
Oh, I like that. It's an important reminder that everything is not fixed.
Yeah, very far from it.
But you get the privilege of working on bigger and better problems together.
There was a moment where Ope shared with me a mindset that she had developed as a product leader, which is to fall in love with the problem. So to remember what is the big thing you're trying to solve and why, right? Because you set out to do something because it's important to you and you care about solving this problem. Along the way, as you iterate, you know, you'll come up with a lot of ideas, but it can be such a trap to get stuck in any one particular solution. It's not really the solution that matters. It's just the, you know, that the problem gets solved.
What do you think that mentality enables?
For me, I think it enables flexibility. It means that when your current solution isn't working, which inevitably it happens, you have that flexibility and humility to say, okay, how else might I solve the problem? And so it's flexibility, but it also gives a true north, right? I've been in love with like the problems of how do you use technology to give more people access to education for a long time. And it's really comforting to be like, yeah, I love this problem. I really want to solve it. I don't know if I'm going to solve it at Google Classroom or at Kibo or wherever, but I'm going to be working on this.
Kibo exists to give more people access to education through technology. Ope is in love with this problem. It's the reason she became a founder. In the beginning, she worried that being too hands-on would feel like micromanagement to her team. If we're being honest, she really feared that she would get stuck telling them what to do. But being hands-off actually created the problem she feared most. Her people were underperforming and she got sucked in. She was living her worst-case scenario. To me, this is where Ope's story really got interesting. Being clear about her expectations, as heavy as it felt in the beginning, actually allowed her team to be more entrepreneurial, not less. Creating structure allowed her team to flex their creativity. I've worked with dozens of founders. Almost everyone has lived a version of this journey. Ope is remarkable because she got help to try something new and uncomfortable. Eventually, she built a habit around it, and she unlocked her team's success and Kibo's growth because of it. If you relate to anything Ope mentioned in this podcast or want to learn more about how you can be effective in managing your team, I invite you to have a chat with someone at Talentism. Drop us a line at info@talentism.com and schedule a 30-minute conversation with one of our coaches. We want to hear from you. You can learn more about how we guide our clients at talentism.com, where we share our insights from serving over 800 companies. If you have a leader you'd like to see featured on this show or a topic you'd like us to cover, email me at angie@talentism.com. And of course, be sure to follow or subscribe to The Clarifier wherever you get your podcasts. This episode was produced by John Hunter and Jesse Gormazano, with story editing by Jesse Gormazano and original music by John Hunter. Special thanks to Greg Kim, Rachel Kitto, and Rocio Gonzalez.